Hiya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew FPS and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Lachlan Finnegan's wild and weird trip fest flick, The Surfer, is one that's had local audiences salivating at the prospect of its arrival. That anticipation went into hyperdrive when Oscar-winning actor and walking cult factory Nicolas Cage was announced as the leading man, a bloke returning home to the southwest to buy his family home, reconnect with his family during Christmas, and catch a little surf. His idea of the Christmas sojourn is scarpered when the locals, headed up by Julian McMahon at his career best, thwart his chance of escaping the heat and securing the home he has his eyes on. Locals only here. Is what they say. Surfer is, admittedly, a divisive flick, with reactions ranging from comparisons to Wake and Fright to our own critic, Cody Allen, voicing displeasure with it. I personally found the film akin to that of a dehydrated fever dream, as if you're continually out of reach of hydrolytes and salvation, so instead you have to resort to drinking dog shit covered water and maybe chowing down some of the local rodents to get by. Eat the rat indeed. It's a sweaty, filthy, and at times oddly representative of what it feels like to visit Margaret River and yaling up after downing too many bevvies at Beer Farm. Yeah, look, it's not a documentary, but it feels like it at times. And yeah, those comparisons to Ted Kotcheff's flick feel apt given its presentation of masculinity, but to me it's more like a West Aussie version of the 70s thriller The Swimmer. There's something really sweaty about The Surfer, a mystery embedded in a world of mean and mad folks who each have a sly streak of cruelty, wrapped up in that familiar Aussie friendliness. I was never sure where Lachlan Finnegan or writer Thomas Martin was taking me, but I was bloody happy to be dragged along in the process. There's a risk-taking mindset to The Surfer, one that pushes at the boundaries of what Aussie films and stories can be. And look, if this is where Aussie stories told from a non-Aussie perspective might be going, then strap me in, I'm in for the whole ride. And as Western Australia ramps up to becoming a full-throttled filmmaking state with the 2026 arrival of our first film studio, it then becomes a good time to touch base with the surrogate sandgroper Robert Connolly, this time wearing a producer hat to talk about his role in bringing The Surfer to WA shores. What his experience of having made films like Paper Planes and Blueback brings to a major production like this one, and additionally what his producing presence means for filmmakers and actors and Aussie creatives. It's always a delight to be able to talk to Robert, just as it's a delight to be able to see global reaction to a film like The Surfer. And if you're in Australia, you'll have a chance to catch the film on the big screen, just how it's meant to be seen, from 16th May 2025, before it heads on a stay-in later in the year. And look, here's the selling part of the show. If you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au, follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. And look, we're completely independent and ad-free, and we live on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. We would love it if you could head over to patreon.com/thecurbau, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. And if you're unable to financially support us, then please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. Really would appreciate it as well if you could head over to your podcast player of choice and give us a rate and review. Every little review helps us amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Right. Here is the trailer for The Surfer, followed by my chat with Robert Connolly. Make sure to catch this one in the cinema, folks. You'll appreciate it that way.
You can't stop a wave. Born in a storm, way out to sea. Pure energy. It's all building to this breaking point.
Hey! Uncle's army!
I grew up here.
Don't live here. Don't surf here.
Hey, Dad.
It's okay. You're scaring my boy.
Now. No need for all this fuss. Listen to me, brother. I know it's smart to lose face in front of your boy, but you gotta know when to back down. Or it could get a whole lot worse.
You're forever going and forever running and forever working, which is good. And that's kind of what I want to talk to you about in relation to The Surfer is the notion of the forever active producing work of Rob Connolly, which is just phenomenal. Like you're so like keen and active and keeping the Australian film stories alive in different ways. And, you know, I've talked to you about your work as a director and writer and things like that, but I've not really talked to you about your work as a producer all too much. So putting on the producer hat, what does that mean for you as a creative in Australia?
Look, I think the key to it's been collaboration, like with others. So, you know, The Surfer was brought to us by an amazing UK producer, Leonora Darby, and she needed a partner to work with her, and we came on board. So, and then if I think of, you know, of other films in the umbrella of our company, like A Memoir of a Snail was actually produced by Liz Carney through the company, and I'm an EP on it, or the films I direct, you know, Kate Laurie and Liz produced and Chloe produced Magic Beach. You know, like for me, I think the trick is to avoid a solitary agenda for your work as a producer, and I guess that began with me collaborating even at the beginning of my career with John Maynard on The Boys, which was the first film ever we produced together. And sometimes I think, you know, the danger, and I enjoy the collaboration with people with different points of view and different ideas. And you know, in the case of The Surfer, someone like Leonora coming to Australia to work with us from the UK independent film community. So, you know, that's an interesting one. And then it's an Irish-Australian co-production with Brunella, who is the Irish producer, bringing the whole experience of running the post-production in Ireland, which is new to us. So for me, I guess to give you a snapshot, it's this idea of this collaborative pool of people that you work with, as opposed to me being like a singular, you know, doing it all on my own, because really it's not possible. Like it sounds away from that, right? It's not possible to do it. Like it's kind of, yeah. If you want to do something on your own, you need to be a novelist or a painter or, you know, even a musician writes a piece of music and then records it with a band and with a music producer. So, yeah. So I guess I'm saying I share the load.
Yeah, well, definitely. And I've talked to people who you've worked with before, like Alina, you know, or like working on Emily as well, you know, and yeah, your work as a producer has really helped facilitate their vision. So when it comes to something like The Surfer, I guess it's a twofold question. Was it always set in Australia? And if so, how do you as a producer help facilitate the vision of setting up, getting it shot here, making it as an Australian story?
Yeah, it was always set here. Where in Australia, it wasn't decided, but it was always set in Australia, so it could be anywhere. And so then I was able to bring on my Australian producing partner, James Grandison, who's got a lot of experience in WA and is based there. And, you know, Leonora and the director came out and James took them on a recce, and we were looking at all the options. And because I'd had such great success in Western Australia with, you know, so many films, from Blueback, Sweet Earth, Paper Planes, you know, this whole bunch, the first step was where in Australia? And so probably the first role was working with the director on that, like, you know, where and where can it be made? And, you know, so they did this massive location recce from way up past Port Hedland, right down the coast to the Yelling Up, you know. And James Grandison actually very early on said, I think this is where it will film, but they had to do like, you know, 14-hour drive down the coast and staying in places to it's like Blueback. I went to Bremer Bay and then looked everywhere and then came back and went, no, Bremer Bay. But so first finding the location, and then creatively the director, being a director myself, and Lorcan being such an amazing, Lorcan Finnegan is an incredible director, if you know his other films. And he needed to advise on crew, you know, who were the crew that, the Australian crew, because it's not a world he's familiar with. He hasn't filmed here before. And so it was inevitable, you know, that we would suggest people to him, and, you know, from the composer through the casting director, the costume designer, the makeup artist, the production designer, the first AD, and then all the Australian actors, you know, like it, and very, so helping steer the ship a little bit on who the Australians are that we would propose. So location and team, and then actors, the cast really, because other than Cage, it's all Australian cast. But I found Lorcan to be just really creatively open. I felt very simpatico with him creatively and inspired by him, actually, just inspired by his approach and with his cinematographer, Radek.
I'm curious then as well, like seeing Australia from such a different perspective, although there are aspects like, you know, I visit Margaret River almost annually and it's like, oh, there's this almost feels documentary like at times, which is not a you know, slight on the Margaret River people. But, you know, it's just, it sees Australia from a completely different perspective. What did that mean for you as a producer to help bring that kind of view of Australia to life?
Well, the films early in my career that I really loved, one of my favourite films of all time is Ted Kotcheff's Wake and Fright, you know, and he's Canadian director making the great Australian film. But even if you think of Nicholas Roeg making Walkabout, which is a film that definitely stands the test of time, I think there is something about the view of the outsider that is very powerful, and, you know, has a really powerful impact. So, you know, I enjoyed having someone bringing a fresh eye to who we are, maybe cut loose a bit from the baggage of our own sense of identity. And it's cheeky kind of political work, actually, The Surfer. Like, it's got a, there's a lot going on. It's very exciting having this really gifted Irish director coming here and working with this amazing author. You know, to kind of make an insightful look into some aspect of who we are as a country. It's cheeky, it's playful. Audiences, you know, the screenings we've had, audiences really love it.
Yeah. It was interesting. I watched this, went to the back lot, watched it last week, and from a WA perspective of getting to see it and getting to experience, you know, a slice of Western Australia on screen like that. I sat next to Matt Eales and we were just both like, what the fuck did we just watch? You know, in a good way, in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a bit like, holy moly, like it's originality and it's point of view and it's fun and it's got energy and it's got the thriller elements and it's got Nicolas Cage in an Australian film. Yeah. You know, it's got a lot of things which are a bit batshit crazy.
Yep. Yep.
You know, which I think cinema is, there's a bland a lack of originality that we know the studio system is grappling with right now and trying to work out how to shake the tree there. And we know that the more bold, adventurous work does cut through. But you've also got to entertain. That's what I like about Lorcan. It's cheek, you know, it's like it's playful. And there's something about Nicolas Cage and Julian McMahon I thought was just superb to work with. Two of them together, you know, as the yin and yang of this story.
I don't think I've seen Julian as great as he has been. Like, he's so phenomenal here, just giving something that kind of turns it up a notch, which is just really, really quite something. Yeah,
I know. And Cage was very, like, after the first few days of working with him, was like, wow, this is great, I'm loving this. Like, he because you've got to have someone that can, the whole film doesn't work unless that role feels like, and it's a performance, it's a physicality, it's a status. He has to have more status than Cage. And Cage brings a lot of his whole, the back, you know, story of all the films he's done, his own physicality, his own status as an actor. So to find an Australian and then to find this iconic Australian who we haven't seen for a while on our screens, do this big role standing up to him. It's so much fun to watch.
Yeah. I was listening to an interview that Miranda Tapsell did, maybe about a year ago. And she was talking about working opposite Cage and trying to get on the level of his performance or trying to understand what she needed to deliver for his performance. And she talked about how you were a guiding force in being able to say, no, just be present and, you know, be in the moment and just kind of reflect on what he's putting forward and that kind of stuff. How important is it for you then to be, as a producer, guiding kind of people who have not really worked with somebody like Nicolas Cage or the style of acting that he has, like Miranda, who, you know, hasn't acted against somebody like Cage before? How much importance is that for you to be on set to guide that?
It's interesting because I think when I do, because I direct as well, I really try and get out of the way a bit because I don't want directors to feel that I want them to feel supported by me, but not feel like, oh, I've got another director on set, or like just to think of me as a friend, as a colleague, as someone who will help. So I'm hyper vigilant and conscious of not stepping on the director's toes, and, you know, making sure the support comes from a kind of, because I understand the unique and individual nature of being a director, and there are a lot of films I've watched, and I've watched the behind the scenes, and I've thought I would never direct like that, but I love the film. Like, I don't believe my way of directing is in any way a kind of definitive way of directing. Like, I don't, you know, it's, and so I think it's probably in gentler ways like that. Like, if Miranda's, you know, got a few concerns, it's more me as her friend and someone rather than me giving any more specific directing. But it's definitely a balance. I don't spend a huge amount of time on set as a producer for that reason. But Lee and Laura, the producer, was on set the whole time. So we always had a producer there supporting Lorc. And now, again, that's the balance of having the three producers of me on set, you know, or on the shoot, you know, me, Leo and James Grandison. You know, James is such an experienced physical producer. I'm kind of helping kind of structurally, you know, with oversight. And then Leonora is, you know, in the trenches on set.
So obviously you've made a bunch of films over here in WA. You would be then really familiar with crews as well and being able to say who's a good person to go to. That would be your role in a producer as well, and being saying, go to this person, go to that person.
Huge.
Yeah. Can you talk about working with WA crews then?
Yeah, so we have, you know, we brought a lot of our key family back together. You know, Leancy had done costumes on Paper Planes. That was the first job she ever did costume design on. And then she did Blueback, and then, you know, followed us right through until The Surfer. You know, Emma Fletcher had come off Sweet As doing production design on that. Mark Boskell, obviously, is the first AD, has done those key films as well with me over there. And so I was able to talk quite specifically to Lorcan about people I'd actually worked with, you know, that I, you know.
Yeah. But then also, what does it mean
you
to...
You know, that I, you know, so I could explain what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting the chance then to work on a bigger production like this and alongside people like Lorcan, like Nicholas, like that's huge. Like,
I'm glad. I think for Leancy and Emma in their careers, it's a bigger film than the films they'd done before. And that, so they get a chance, you know, and they're obviously hugely talented Western Australians who are going to have massive careers ahead. So, and Lorcan's saying to me, so can I trust you? These people are good, are they? You know, he's literally asking me because, you know, there's obviously always going to be people who've been around for 20 years who have done huge films and who he might come to Australia and think, I want to have those people. But what I did love about Lorcan, he was like, no, good. I'll trust you. They sound great, you know, and their work on the film is excellent. So I think you're right. A lot of that for me is, come on, guys. I've put my neck on the chopping block here for you guys. I've told the director it's going to be great.
Yeah. But then I guess, you know, as we lead to wrapping up, the journey that the film's had has been fascinating. You know, Khan screenings as well.
That screening was incredible.
Talk to me about that. Tell me about it.
Midnight, official selection in Cannes. There are only two Australian films, Furiosa one night, The Surfer the next night. Midnight screening, like 2,500 people in the cinema at midnight going crazy. at the end of it, Cage gets the microphone. It's 2:30 in the morning, and he literally, it's like stand-up comedy. He's got the whole crowd chanting "Eat the rat" in French. People cheering. I mean, it was what I loved was the theater of it. Yeah. Like this kind of, you know, this is probably my big thing about cinema. And I was very lucky recently to go to the Oscars with Memoir of a Snail. And that's such a great celebration of the movies as well. And go to Cannes. And this idea that let's not be too anxious. Like, cinema isn't homework. It's rich in detail and complex about who we are, but it's also, it's fun and an adventure. And you go out and you're not at home. You're watching something on streaming. You're getting a glass of wine or chalk top and popcorn. You're watching it. I don't know. Like I've built my whole life around that. And I think big events like that event in Cannes set in motion this incredible adventure for that film. It was a buzz title at Cannes. It sold all over the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a hugely successful film. It's just opened in America on 500 screens. And it's an Australian film that filmed in Yallingup.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't
it? With an Australian cast and crew.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of taken that part of Western Australia to the world, and but in the most energized cinematic way.
Yeah.
And I think the challenge, I think I might talk to you about this before, but you know, I feel like the challenge in this era of domination of streaming is that we have to make films that are really, really, really cinematic.
Mm.
Like The Surfer. But you gotta really roll the dice on that. There's no half measures anymore.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because people just wait, see it down the track.
Yeah. But getting to see it in the cinema, it's like the heat just seeps off the screen. Like I felt hot walking out of that film, because that's the tone, that's the vibe that it is. It's nuts. Like, it's really good. It's a lot of fun. But
I'm glad you got to see it in a cinema. Thanks so much. And with a few other people, because you can, when you watch it, it's like, what am I, that feeling you had, I love, what am I watching here?
Yeah. And I think, like, as you mentioned, we kind of, at times we're a little bit safe, right? Australian film can be a little bit safe, but it's when we push the boundaries a little bit and get to tell these kinds of things, which are just like pushing against what cinema can do or the stories that we tell.
That's exactly right.
Recontextualizes things. It's exciting.
And I think Cage does that. Like he was incredible to work with. Incredible. Like disciplined, hardworking, prepared. And because of that work that he does, he's then able to explore on screen. Like there was one period where he improvised for 3 or 4 minutes and the whole crew were just watching, going, like watching like a virtuosic performance unfold. So he's able to have that play and adventure in his performance, because it's funny, you until you work with someone, you don't know. You think, oh, is it just natural genius? He is incredible. He reminds me so much of a lot of qualities that Eric Banner has when I work with him, of like take a serious career and do the work and the preparation and get the foundation so strong. And so I love that about watching him and how he worked. And then I think you get that little bit of magic, that kind of crazy magic, that risk-taking flair. That, you know, hard to think of a Nick Cage film that doesn't have that flair. And there's films people more than others. People might have favourites and not, you know, but they're all distinguished by that spirit, you know. And it's almost like, it's infused into the work and it leads everyone there.
Yeah. I mean, he has this style of dancing in his eyes, which is just very exciting, and it imbues the film with an energy.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. That's, very true.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to this chat with Robert Connolly. The Surfer arrives in Aussie cinemas on 16th May. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.